Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The officers who found the 16 children, the Sider 16 children in that house of horror, were not looking for them. Did you know that? Deputies in Vinton County, Ohio, went to a house in Hamden on a warrant that had nothing to do with children. Ohio Attorney General Andy Wilson has said they had no expectation that any of the kids were inside. The school district had no record of them existing. The neighbors did not know they were there. No caseworker had ever knocked on that door. They opened it for an unrelated reason. Because dad liked to allegedly show his junk to the neighbors and found 16 kids. The oldest is 18 years old. Investigators said she could not write her own name. Hold on to her because she is the whole story. And we're going to come back to her in just a second. And give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're watching or listening so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case. And I'd love to get your thoughts. We'll continue our conversation there as we move through this. Four adults have now been charged each with 16 counts of second-degree felony child endangering. All four have pled not guilty. No grand jury has returned an indictment, and everything the state alleges remains an allegation until a jury says otherwise. But this part is not an allegation. 16 children were found by accident. Let's start with how invisible they were, because that's the part that should simply not be possible. Investigators believe the family had moved through more than one Ohio county over the years and had largely stayed off the record that most families leave behind without thinking about it. No enrollment, no documented doctor visits anyone can point to other than giving birth, the kind of paper trail that follows the rest of us from birth, and that nobody in that house seems to have ever generated. The sheriff has described the conditions inside as worse than the conditions the animals on the property were kept in. That's his account. The defense also wants to have theirs, but the conditions are not the thing that should keep you here. The thing that should keep you here is simpler. 16 children lived in that house, and the state of Ohio did not know a single one of them was alive. How? How did no one know about them? Not underestimated the number. Not knew about them and failed to act. Did not know they existed. 16 human beings born over the better part of two decades in the state that issues birth certificates and runs schools and funds child protection had formed no picture of any of them. They were citizens of Ohio the way a rumor is a citizen. On paper somewhere. And nowhere in practice. And then 13 days after they were found, money showed up. The Ohio Controlling Board approved $1 million in emergency funding to care for them. Came out of the state account that already existed, already had money in it, already had the word contingency in the name. Remember that number because it answers a question most people never think to ask. The question is this: whose job was it to find them? Everyone assumes there's an answer. Everyone assumes that somewhere in the machinery of a modern state, there is a person in office, a program, whose actual assignment is to notice a child who has fallen off the map. Guess what? There is not. The Siders case is what that absence looks like when you finally see it. As we all tell ourselves, oh, well, the system will do this. There's something in place for this or that. There isn't. There isn't. Maybe alluded to on paper. Maybe there's sometimes even departments of these sort of things. But when they're not staffed, they're not funded, there's nobody there to do these jobs. Do they really exist? Or is it more of an idea than an actual inaction? Agency or person. Think about how the oldest child came into the world. Court records indicate she was born when her mother was 15 years old. A birth like that happened somewhere in a hospital, the midwife in a system that generates a record. 15-year-old giving birth is not invisible in that moment. Somebody is standing right there in some state. Ron O'Brien spent decades as the prosecutor in Franklin County, Ohio, talking about cases like this. He's made the point that a birth to a girl that young is exactly the moment a mandated reporter is supposed to stop and ask a hard question. A 15-year-old does not become pregnant without an adult somewhere having a great deal to answer for. That question is supposed to get asked in the room out loud by someone whose legal job it is to ask. But hey, with this family, the judge said, it's A-okay. You go ahead and marry that minor. And guess what? The laws exist to say you can do that. But here's the part that turns the whole system inside out. O'Brien has also pointed out that if no report was ever actually made, it is entirely possible that no law was broken. The duty to report exists. The consequence for failing to do in practice frequently does not. It's not a loophole. That is the design. We built a system with a mandate and no enforcement. And then we act surprised when the mandate goes unmet. The mandate sounds big on paper. Mandated reporter. Woohoo! The buck stops there, right? No. Even when the mandate reporters report, if it reports to something that doesn't have the capacity to act, well, all those mandated reports really don't mean shit, now do they? And notice what that means for a family that wants to disappear. You don't need a bunker or a fake name. You just need to never generate the records the rest of us generate by accident. Skip the enrollment. Skip the checkups. Deliver at home. Do that consistently enough across county lines, across state lines. Simply never file forms or pictures of yourself because nothing in the system is actively assembling one. It waits to be handed a reason to look. In Hamden, it was never handed one. So a child is born to a 15-year-old, and the moment passes, and no alarm goes off anywhere, and that child grows up in a house in Hamden that you could have driven past 1,000 times, invisible, because invisibility is the default, and somebody has to actively choose to pierce it. In that house, nobody did. This has happened before, and the last time it happened at this scale, it happened in a place that's supposed to prove the system can work. That is the one comparison worth making. They're going to come right back here to Ohio. In January of 2008, two United States Marshals went to a row house in Southeast Washington to serve an eviction notice. Remember this story? Upstairs, they found four girls. They'd been dead since the previous summer. Their mother had been living in the house with them the entire time. It's like reverse Norman Bates. Here's why that matters for Hamden. At the moment those marshals walked in, the child welfare system in Washington had been operating under the direct supervision of a federal judge for 19 years. Monitors, court orders, benchmarks, the most watched child welfare system in the country, and four children still died in a house while it was being watched. So when people tell you the Sider children slipped through because Ohio was not paying enough attention, remember Washington. Attention was not the missing ingredient there. A federal judge was personally paying attention, and it did not find those four girls either, which means the problem is not that somebody in Ohio was asleep. The problem is deeper than any one county. It doesn't get fixed by the thing everyone is about to demand. Because here's the sentence coming for Ohio. You can write it now and save everyone the trouble. The agency was underfunded and understaffed. This is what we hear everywhere. It's a sentence that arrives after every one of these cases. Underfunded, understaffed. And you have to understand who it serves. When an agency fails and is finding, and the finding is that it needed more money, nothing gets changed. Nobody's fired. The agency does not shrink. It grows. A dead child becomes a line in next year's budget. The explanation and the reward point go in the same direction, which is why it's always the explanation. Now, Vinton County is real and it deserves a fair hearing. It is one of the least populated, least wealthy counties in Ohio. A caseworker there is genuinely stretched thin, covering a lot of ground with very little. That is true, and it matters. But hold it up against the $1 million. When those 16 children were finally found, the money to care for them materialized in under 2 weeks out of a fund that had been sitting there the whole time. The money was never the thing standing between those kids and being found. It showed up the instant they were found, and it just had nothing to do with finding them. So follow the money, because it tells you what the system actually is built to do. The federal foster care system is called Title IV-E. The Congressional Research Service puts federal support for it at an estimated $10.1 billion a year and describes it as a mandatory, permanent, open-ended entitlement. No cap. As long as a child qualifies, the money keeps coming. And federal eligibility is assessed at the moment the child is removed from the home. Here's what that means. For most of its history, that money could only be spent after a child was taken from a house. After. Washington would help a state pay to remove a child. It would not help that state keep the house from becoming a place the child had to be removed from. Reforms in recent years opened a narrow lane for prevention, capped and limited. Removal is unlimited. Prevention is rationed. Removal is unlimited. Prevention is rationed. Can you imagine if we did more to prevent these sort of things? You have to take my word that it points the wrong way. The policy office inside the Federal Department of Health and Human Services has said it in writing that the funding structure is inflexible, that it emphasizes foster care, and that it drives processes instead of outcomes. That's the government grading its own paper and giving it an F. So it's not a shortage of money. $10 billion a year is not a shortage. It is a direction. Every dollar is aimed at the moment after a child is already in the state's hands. Not $1 is aimed at the moment before, when a child is sitting in a house nobody is looking at. Run the slider children through that logic and it turns your stomach. The instant those 16 kids were removed from that house, they became eligible. They became, in the coldest budgetary sense, worth something. The system, worth something to the system. System that had ignored them their entire lives. A caseworker can now be paid to manage their placement. A file exists. The machine finally has a reason to spend, and it will spend. It just needed them taken first. That's the whole answer. The spigot opens the second you take a child, and it pays nobody anywhere to go find one, which is precisely why an 18-year-old girl could sit in a room in Hamden for her entire life while the state of Ohio held her birth certificate in a filing cabinet. The $1 million was never missing. It was waiting for them to be found. She was born to a 15-year-old. And Ohio wrote her name down. And then no one came. Not a school, not a nurse, anyone can point to, not a caseworker. Eight brothers and sisters were born behind her while she was in that house. And the same nothing greeted each of them. Before anyone opened that door, she turned 18. Think about what that means there. There's a window in a person's life when the law says an adult must be responsible for them. When the child is owed protection by default, that window closed on her while she was still inside that room. She aged out of childhood before anyone knew her childhood was happening. That one span of years when the state was obligated to care whether she existed ended quietly, with the state never having noticed that she did. She's now a grown woman with no school record, no diploma, no work history, and no way to write her own name. And somewhere, in a county office in Ohio, a piece of paper still sits in a drawer with that name typed across it. In the handwriting of a stranger, filed the year she was born and never looked at again. And she is only the oldest. Behind her are 15 more, each with their own version of the same erasure. Each owed a childhood the state never registered them as having. She's the one I keep returning to, only because her age makes the failure impossible to argue with. The clock ran all the way out on her, in full, and no one was watching it. People say a case like this forces a choice. Either we're a society that takes care of each other, or we're a society that lets everyone fend for themselves. Pick one. I don't think we picked either. I think we built something that lets us say the first while we live in the second. A structure expensive enough and complicated enough that we can point to it and call it a safety net. And what it actually produces is not safety. It produces a receipt, proof that somebody somewhere was theoretically responsible, so the rest of us don't have to be. 16 children were found in that house by accident. There is no accident coming for the rest of them. My, what a broken system we have. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Sider family got caught because of a random misdemeanor warrant because dad couldn't keep his pants on around the neighbors, allegedly. Oh, that's it. That's the entire safety net that worked. The store employees noticed the neighbors were feet away. Nobody called. And here's the uncomfortable premise. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is here to walk us through. This case is not rare. Families like this exist in every state, every county, seen and unseen at the same time. This next part here is about the psychology of everyone on the outside, why we notice and do nothing, and how many of these houses we've walked past. Is it really that, though? Is it really that we say we do nothing, or is it more so societal because we know if we say something, we see something, nothing happens? That seems to be more of what it is. And then why expose ourselves? Why waste the time? Why do this when you report it and it goes absolutely nowhere? A lot of attention being brought on the people who saw him at the Dollar General or here or there. I mean, do the people who saw these folks and smelled them and felt the despair and saw those kids? And when I see kids like this at the store, I mean, it's heartbreaking. And my immediate reaction is they're effed. They are completely effed if these are the parents that they have. But I know there's absolutely nothing I can do by walking past them at the Dollar General or the Walmart or wherever that will help these kids or save these kids from the absolute shit, horrible decision-making mutant parents that they have. That seems to be the reality that we live in, is we like to pretend we're saying something and seeing something and doing something, but the doing something is the part that never really goes on, or if it does, it's very half-assed, and then the system is designed to put the kids back with abusers. That seems to be our problem here. We have no place to put them. So the convenient thing is, well, let's just try and hope to God mom and dad change their ways. And they never do. And it's just cycle and it just goes on and on and on and on.
You know, the person I'd like to have a conversation with is the obstetrician. She gave birth in the hospital. First thing when I heard this story, I thought she must have had all these babies at home. But no, she gave birth in the hospital. And if you're an obstetrician and you have a young woman in her 20s, early 30s, and you're saying, how many births have you had? You know, this is your 13th, your 14th, your 15th. Don't you ask some questions at that point? You know, this is so far out of the normal of human behavior. And I guess that this is a hospital that was too small to have a funded social work position, you know? But isn't this a family where even at that level, at the medical level, people would have been alarmed and been looking at this closely and asking questions? And it doesn't seem like that happened.
But is there, I guess my question to you, is there anything that they could have done? I mean, I would have to guess that after all these births in this hospital, that people, you know, on the side are like, oh my God, she's back again. And there's chatter amongst like, oh, this is, you know, and there's chatter, but is there truly anything that they could have done? I don't know the answer to that.
I like to think in a functional public health system, which
in a functional public health
system. In a functional public health system.
Yes.
And I have
the word functional.
Right. I have seen this happen at some times. If there's a family where there are questions, where there are concerns, you don't even necessarily need to open a CPS file, but you can make a request that a public health nurse go out to the home and check on the family. You know, how is mom doing postpartum? And I think, you know, when we're looking at systemic changes, why doesn't that happen with every birth where there's just a follow-up visit from a public health nurse a few months down, weeks or months down the road? How is everybody doing? You know, you would catch postpartum depression that way. You could catch people who are, you know, inadequately nourished. You could certainly catch these hoarding households, but I think a home visit would be a good thing.
I hope to bring a little more to the conversation. I haven't had a chance to talk to my daughter yet, who is a labor and delivery nurse, and so she sees. She is so insightful on this kind of stuff, and I just haven't had a chance to talk to her. She's been working nonstop since this broke, so I plan on asking her about what she do in this situation. What do her colleagues do? Because I know they are so attentive to people like this. I've just heard stories. I just know her. I know her colleagues there. I've never seen more passionate people about what they do in the world. So it's a good question.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to catch these things, and I don't even feel like these things weren't caught. This is out in the open. I mean, the people caught these things. It's just there's nothing that happens when they are caught. I mean, it's like, what do you do? Okay, we've determined there's a house with 16 children. Who wants to adopt the kids that can't speak, that are, you know, feral? Like, what do you do with it? What do you do with these poor souls that are the victims of their circumstance? I mean, we don't seem to have a very good plan in place for any of that. We have a lot of talk of we're going to catch this, we're going to do that, but then it's like, okay, now what do we do next? and that's where we seem to be stuck. Why are we stuck there, Siobhan? Why are we so stuck there as a society where it's like, here's how our system is broken. Here's where we bring these problems on a silver platter to the attention of society. And it's like, we got no real way to deal with this. And we never seem to like legislate anything or do anything to fix this massive problem in our society, which is then systemic of all of the other problems that end up coming into our society. Mm-hmm. When people end up becoming adults and they can't function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, a place where you and I often get to. It's like, hey, we're great at identifying the problems, but what the hell do you do about it?
Yeah.
And we run into it. I live in Portland, Oregon, and we've got a big, as most major urban areas do, we've got a big problem with unhoused folks, mentally ill folks, addicted to drug folks, and a lot of pregnant, unhoused, mentally ill, addicted folks who are living, you know, under the bridge.
Yeah.
And everybody throws their hands up. What can we do? What can we do? And we go around and around and around with trying to come up with solutions and trying to get people into treatment, but they don't want treatment. And I think we have a country built on the concept of freedom, right? Mm-hmm. And we take that to an extreme degree, that people are free to eat out of trash cans if they want to. Are they free to feed their children out of trash cans if they want to? Are they free to raise children and live under a bridge somewhere? And I think that's where a lot of this gets stuck, is that we don't want the, you know, you'll hear so many times political speeches, we don't want the government. We don't want the government controlling us. We don't want the government monitoring us. That's a communist system or whatever, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, this idea of freedom. Well, there are people that can't manage life, and they should not be bringing kids into unsafe, awful situations. And I think it's something, is it uniquely American? I don't know. We may struggle with it more than other countries do because we have such an emphasis on personal freedom here.
Do we need to revisit? I mean, there are obviously, you know, group homes and essentially orphanages and things of that nature that exists in the world. And we think back to many, many old days where in state hospitals and things of that nature that were not run well. And I know we've had this conversation 1,000 times, too. But for the sake of the story, we should touch it again. Do we need to revisit some of these things on a massive scale again, where we do have massive campuses that exist for state hospital care for people who truly need it, or for children who are in homes like this, where it's certainly not the best situation where you got the parents there and it's a lovely family, but the state hospital home or the state orphanage home is still better than this. Yeah. I feel like we could do better in a lot of these areas, but we don't want to touch them because, oh, well, that was real icky back then. It wasn't. Yeah. Well, we could do better. We could totally revisit this stuff. We could create a safer environment. And yes, they're all ripe for abuse. They always have been. They always will be. That's why you have oversight and you fix it. We don't just keep going, well, it could go wrong this way. Well, guess what? Out in society, it's going 10 times worse. So it may not be the best, but it's better than that. And we can do this, but we, for whatever reason, we always seem to be telling ourselves that we can't. Yeah. And we have to just stick with the status quo, which clearly has not been working out very well. Is there anything going on in this world, in our country, in systems like that to bring some of those things back, or to rebuild or start from scratch with a new concept in those veins that would better serve children, especially in these sort of environments? Because right now it's just shuffle the kids around from one random home to the next in most cases, mm-hmm, for until those parents go, oh shit, I didn't know it was going to be difficult raising a child with mental health problems because of the shitholes they came out of. And then they get sent to the next home, and then abuse happens along the way. And we're just like, oh, well, we did our best. We don't do anything right. We can't seem to figure these problems out, even though they're staring us in the face, mm-hmm, every damn day.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, therapeutic residential treatment programs do exist for kids. And we have some for mentally ill adults as well. We don't have nearly enough. And so you don't need this gigantic, big institutional orphanage, but we do need programs that are smaller, that are based in homes, large homes, where you have a team of, it's not just a husband and wife, but you have a team of people who rotate in throughout the day and throughout the night, rotating staff who are well-trained, educated. You have therapists, you know, that work there as well. Treatment plans for every kid. Kids' needs are met. So we do know how to do those things, but the problem is funding those things, and do taxpayers prioritize that we do need to build a better system of, I'll call it residential care, you know, rather than institutionalizing people. Mm-hmm. But where if you're an adult and you're living out under a bridge and you're rolling in the dirt and screaming because you can't stop using meth, that we can look at that and say, you know, as a society, we need to do better for that person, because this is not a person who can make a choice. You know, they're too mentally ill. And can we come up with a better living situation for them and enact that? You know, this is called assisted outpatient treatment is happening in some states. It needs to happen more and it needs to be funded more. But where you can say, you know, this idea about personal freedom, this is a great concept, but some people are clearly not able to manage it and they are having kids. And we do need more residential care for folks.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been distracted trying to do all the research since you're talking about fixes. What popped in my mind is we keep seeing all these overhauls of all these other shiny programs all over the place. And so I was curious, when was the last time there's a real overhaul of any of the programs associated with this? The empty air I'm coming to is pretty interesting. They updated their homeschooling program. No extra funding.
They downgraded basically.
Because I was curious, you know, I am a root cause guy. You know, what root cause can prevent, you know, it's like yesterday when we were talking, Tony was like, you know, people and politicians and everyone keeps coming up with Band-Aids, but Band-Aids don't fix the problem. Band-Aids mask it till the next election, so it can be a nice slogan for people. But is anyone doing anything? You know, you don't have to like the politics of it, but Rudy Giuliani, way back when I first got assigned New York in the FBI, first thing he did to overhaul crime in the city was he got rid of squeegees, you know, the squeegee guys. Because if you take care of the grassroots level, it then will spring from there and then crime will go down. You know, that was the theory and it worked out pretty good. And then Bloomberg took it over. And then so since then, they did the same thing. Like, let's go at the root cause. And so yesterday we talked about the root cause. What kind of things, instead of Band-Aids with all these things after it's already had them, very reactively, what can we do proactively when they're really small, really young? Like, that's why I asked Siobhan about the camp thing. You know, what kind of new programs at that grassroots level can get in there to prevent all these things from happening? And I've researched, has anything been done in that area?
No.
No.
You know, so there, again, people keep pouring slogans at Band-Aids, but it's still not fixing these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm ranting. I want to throw this. I mean, because I know you said, you know, the taxpayers need to give a shit enough to do anything. Is it that the taxpayers don't care, or is it that the legislature doesn't bring any ideas either, and that they don't want to go there, and that there may be other forces at play here that don't want to be examined, that are enjoying the system as is? I mean, who's benefiting from any of this, I guess, would be the question. Who's benefiting from a broken child welfare system? Predators? Mm-hmm. Is that our answer? I mean, at the end of the day, this doesn't seem to be that it need. I don't know. I don't think any of these fixes are like rocket science. We just don't do them.
Yeah.
Who's being incentivized? Who's enjoying the system being as broken as it is, and basically a clearinghouse for broken children, predators?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, here's what I think is another problem with it is that, you know, so here we are. We're compassionate, caring people on our show. All our contributors are. And we're critical thinkers. But when you look at people that get elected, not all of them, you know, but in general, you don't have that kind of, because I don't, like my years ago, people said, Robin, do you ever want to run for politics out of the FBI? I said, what are you, nuts? No, you know, but to be a decision maker and that can actually redirect funds and attack, you know, the core root of things, you actually have to be a critical thinker and actually look at cause and effect. I mean, we have a big employment issue, understaffing in critical jobs. I mean, just think about what one small program of exposing kids to good, healthy behaviors at a young age could do for everything in this country or everything in the world. Yet it doesn't, and it's not rocket science, like we keep saying, but no one has the willingness to just make a shift. And I don't care. Both parties, you know, claim this, you know, so just do something. It is such a small, minute fix to just, instead of treating the cut with a Band-Aid, just don't have that little nick hurt that's going to get infected, because that's exactly what keeps happening in every single one of these cases. It's just infuriating.
And it takes me back, this thing about, yes, Robin, you should run for office. We would all love that. We'd vote for you. But but we didn't even have a federal law against child abuse until 1974. And so, you know, when we look for solutions from politicians, I mean, I think they need to hear from a lot of people that this matters to us. And we want the welfare of kids to take priority, because it, even if it costs money up front, it's going to save so much down the road.
That's so mind-blowing. It's so mind-blowing. I mean, you want to save taxpayer dollars, you want to save money to do big projects? Absolutely. How do you do it? You don't pay for $1 million of Band-Aids. You just spend a couple hundred thousand, or even just a couple hundred, a couple thousand, to just create a program here. I mean, because the net is going to be, would be wide. Would you catch everyone in that net? No. But if you, I'm just think about, if you look at those numbers, we're talking, what number did I give out? 500,000, something like that? If you just think about the impact, if you could create one program with a couple thousand dollars that makes a 10% difference, that is 100,000 kids. And that's only 10% difference. The likelihood of it being greater, even more. That's 100,000 kids that just are better off today than they would have been otherwise.
We have to, as a society, in our country, we have to have a society saying, you know what? Not everybody deserves to have complete autonomy and freedom to do whatever you want. Eat out of the garbage can and then feed your kids out of the garbage can.
And then it manifests in things like Nick Reiner.
Yeah, I mean, we need a society that says, you know what? You're not healthy. You're a danger to yourself and others. And because we're sane and we're not idiots, we'd like to help you. We don't want you to not have any autonomy here forever, but we need to help get you there. And the only way to get you there is by stepping in and saying, you can't take care of yourself right now. If you see an injured animal on the street or something like that, you want to care for it. We're more caring about an injured dog than we are the people. And all in the name of freedom. People don't seem to understand the difference between, you know, freedom and actual care.
Compassion.
Compassionate care for other people. It is not compassionate. It is not caring to let people live in their own squalor who are incapable of getting out of it. That is the exact opposite.
Because compassion is empathy plus action. Yep. And that equals compassion. And I mean, I served my country for many, many years, like my entire life. And I'm a big freedom guy. I love our Constitution. Yep. It gives a lot of freedoms. But freedom without compassion, what the hell is the point?
Good point.
Exactly. We'll wrap on that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Robin Drake running for president.
That's what I saw. I should never have said that. My loving critic, as you all know, or Kim, would have a problem with it, I think.
I would too. You can't leave this show, even if it serves your country more.
But can you imagine the viewers you'd get?
Your thoughts, comment section. All right, Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Also, audiobook. Please
read it multiple
times,
too. You get something every time you read it.
Yeah, her story, extremely powerful, especially on this topic here, too. And Robin's It's Not All About Me, his latest, available wherever you get books and audiobooks. Leave a review on Amazon and go check that out. Until next time, for Robin, for Siobhan, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spin on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.